Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
The massive search operation for Mr. Don Tidy and his kidnappers is being organised from the incident room here at Rathfarnham Garda Station. It's believed to be the biggest operation of its kind.
We want to know that our father is well and fit now. And if my father could contact us, or the kidnappers could contact us and give us some proof that he is.
It's been marvellous to recover Mr. Tidy uninjured, but unfortunately our success has been saddened by the death of two very brave young men who died in the hail of fire outside Ballinamore today.
The Sheehan family have been in the Gardaí almost since the foundation of the state. Grandfather, father, and now the son who has so tragically been killed in this particular security operation.
When we first heard the news today, we heard the good news. And then came the bad news. It has been very shattering for everybody.
How are you feeling, Mr. Tide?
I might ask you, how do I look?
Great! Great. How do you feel, though?
I feel perfectly physically fit and well. However, I personally feel the utmost sadness for the parents and relatives of those who have died.
Some very familiar voices there, including the RTÉ reporter Charlie Bird, former Justice Minister Michael Noonan, former Taoiseach Garret Fitzgerald and supermarket executive Don Tidy, each of them talking about that moment in 1983 when Don Tidy was kidnapped near his home in Dublin. Now, his disappearance led to the largest combined Garda and Army security operation in the history of the state and resulted in the death of two people, Garda Gary Sheehan and Private Patrick Kelly, who were both shot dead by the Provisional IRA. The event is the focus of tonight's episode of The Case I Can't Forget on RTÉ One television at 9:35, and it will feature a number of those who took part in that search operation, including former soldier PJ Higgins. And PJ is here now. You're very welcome, PJ.
Thanks for
joining us today. Can we go back to 1983? And I want you just to remind people what happened in the days just after Don Tidy was kidnapped near his home in Dublin.
Well, after Don Tidy was kidnapped, you see, there was two incidents going on concurrently. Sherrod Garrett had gone missing as well, and Don Tidy was after being kidnapped. So both of them ran concurrently. But we didn't have much involvement in it. So we'd gone home, and then on Sunday evening I was in bed, and next thing, a Land Rover landed at the house and said that you have to report in the morning, we're leaving at 4 o'clock for Ballinamore. It's a mission.
Mm-hmm. So in Leitrim.
That was the first thing we knew about it, Claire. And we arrived in Athlone and we got kitted up and we had to bring a 72-hour kit and headed off to Ballinamore, still not aware of what was going on. We were in the square in Ballinamore across from the Garda station around 5 a.m. and the two busloads of the young guards from Templemore arrived. There was briefings going on then at a higher level. And about 8 o'clock we got a brief just to say that we were carrying out searches. And it would be fair to say that Don Tidy wasn't on our radar. We actually assumed because of the area, most of us had worked up there because some of us had been stationed in Ballyconnell just across the road. And we assumed that it was Sherrod Garda we were looking for.
So you weren't told what you were doing there?
Absolutely not. Like, nobody was sure. And I don't even think they were at a higher level they were sure. It was either one or other. And the soldiers on the ground, a lot of us believed that this was Sherrod Garda that we were looking for.
Extraordinary. So would you say it's fair to say that it was completely chaotic at that time?
Absolutely, you're putting it mildly. Because you were given coordinates and you went to a wood. And we formed what we would call a skirmish line. That would be a straight line going into the wood. And we were about maybe five paces apart. And the idea was to keep in contact with each other. But once you went into the wood, it was like walking in a bog, if you ever walked in a bog, where your feet actually sink into the ground. Yeah. So you had to bend down on your hunkers because you were going underneath these type of Christmas-type trees. And you have to remember, we were badly equipped, we were badly clothed, we had no wet gear, and all the water was coming down. This was the 16th, this 13th of December, and it was raining, and all of the water was coming down on top of us. And as you got into the wood, it became pure black. So you lost sight and vision of the guy to your right and to your left. And sometimes you may become disoriented that you just didn't know where you were.
And so you didn't have the right equipment. You didn't know what you were searching for.
Absolutely.
And you couldn't see anything.
Yeah. And it was something like something in the dark ages. We just weren't prepared for such a mission.
And also you weren't used to working with the Gardaí.
Well, we would have been worked. That probably wouldn't be fair in the sense that we would have been working with the ordinary Gardaí on checkpoints at various times.
Yeah, but not in a situation like this.
Not in a situation. And plus, we didn't know who was guards. Because while we had a line of soldiers going across fields searching, out in front of us was armed detectives with Uzi machine guns. And the only way to identify those people were they had a blue armband, they had a pink armband, they had a red armband. Not in Garda uniform. Like, it could have been anybody.
Mm-hmm. And how many days were you doing that for? And what were the days like?
Okay. Well, the days were very, very long. Firstly, you'd be up around 5 in the morning. You'd have breakfast at 6. You'd leave Longford at around 6:30. And you'd start searching at 8. You'd be given certain moods to which to search. And around 4 o'clock, you'd be called back in. And you'd go back to Longford. And then when you got back to Longford, your first priority was to get some food and to dry the clothes, because the clothes you were wearing, you had to put them back on the next day. So we had potbelly stoves. The old soldiers will know what that is. And you'd put turf and fuel into them and they'd hang your socks and your jocks and your uniforms around them, trying to dry them and make them suitable for 6 o'clock in the morning again.
Mm.
And that was the rotor. And to say that we were ill-prepared would be putting it mildly. And, you know, on reflection, I often hear about the Ring of Steel, Clare, and, you know, but there was no Ring of Steel. We had underground about 200 people underground. Let's say in Lebanon, currently, you'd have 3,000 people in the same area. You know, so
when you say Ring of Steel, that's how it was being reported at the time.
That was the perception given, but there was no Ring of Steel, Claire. It was, you could walk straight through it. And the local people were there, the farmers and everything else. Plus, you have to factor in a very important aspect was that the soldier wasn't a welcome person in that part of the country.
Yeah, I saw that in the documentary that you said that. Will you explain a little bit more to me about what that was like for you?
Do you see, in that part of the country, they viewed us as free state. I won't use a second word on the radio, but you know the word. And that's what we were called. And you take it in various towns and along that border. There was pubs that we couldn't go in to have a pint.
You weren't welcome.
We were a soldier. Because if you went in, you got beaten and kicked out. That was the least that was going to happen to you. So let's say a small little village like Ballinamore. Like there was a dance there on a Saturday night. You couldn't go into that dance on your own and you definitely couldn't come over. It was the same in Belturba then and in Ballyconnell, only a small little village.
Like, and people need to remember as well when we're thinking about this was 1983. This
that's
was
right.
At the height of the Troubles.
Okay, things have changed now in Ballinamore. I had coffee there and everything since. But I'm going back to when the height of the Troubles were and they didn't want us because predominantly... It would be fair to say that the IRA had a lot of safe houses there and they used them to good effect.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come, let's say if you were walking through and you could be walking all day and you go by a house and, you know, right now you'd probably get a cup of tea, but then they'd close the door in your face.
Mm, different times. Don Tidy was found, as we heard there in the clip, and brought home safely, but a soldier and a guard lost their lives.
Yeah.
The guard, the recruit, Gary Sheehan, and 35-year-old Private Patrick Kelly. And you knew Patrick Kelly and you knew his family and you've kept in touch with them over the years.
Exceptionally well. Paddy and I had been to Lebanon in 81 and we were involved in another incident in Dynatar where an Irish soldier went missing and a mum was killed. And... So he was a kind of a mentor to me because I was only a 21-year-old, came from college into the army, 21 years of age, and was in charge of a section of men. So Paddy used to tell me to calm down, Gosson, you know, relax, Gosson. And he lived down the road from me and To say he was a gentleman was putting it mildly. Would Paddy have killed anybody? Absolutely not. And, you know, this is the one thing that I always keep coming back to, Clare. We were ill-prepared. And I say this in the sense that no Irish soldier that I know of in my 42-year service ever went out to kill anybody. And we went to Ballinamore with purely the intentions to search. But the killers of Paddy Kelly went to kill. They were prepared to kill. They had an exit route. They had planned, pre-planned everything, and they were prepared to kill to get out.
Mm-hmm.
But we were never prepared to shoot.
Would you say that the entire event, and we'll talk about what happened afterwards, that it was a turning point for the Defence Forces?
Well, it was an absolute turning point, and it wouldn't happen today because it's a very professional outfit now. I mean, I love the Army, and I wouldn't do anything differently, and I would encourage every young fella to join the Army for 3 years. That would be me. And that's my heart is in the Army, so I'm never going to run it down. So I just want to put that on the record. But it changed the whole, it changed our relationship with that sort of an organisation.
In the aftermath of this, you had the funerals, the sad funerals of Garda Gary Sheehan and Patrick Kelly, which, you know, people will see tonight is just such a poignant moment to see Patrick Kelly's children standing by the side of the grave, a desperately sad moment, and Gary Sheehan's family too. But Don Tidy was found, a capital murder investigation began, a fraught investigation, and at one point the Garda surrounded a house in Clare Morris and IRA members escaped in front of their eyes. Now I want to play a clip from tonight's documentary where one of the Garda involved in the investigation talk about that moment. Ah, we don't have that clip, okay. But what happened was the people were in a safe house. Mm. There was an operation to go into that house and they escaped across over the fields.
That was crazy. Clare, I often think about, we often talk about this when we had a cup of tea afterwards. At that particular stage, we were in Ballinamore and the danger had passed because they had gone. They were gone. They were back in the safe house.
But as far as you were concerned, were your instructions still to search the woods?
Absolutely. We were still searching up until the 24th of December. And, like, it was absolute madness. And the danger had passed. They had gone within an hour of the incident. And we were still there until the 24th of December. And this incident in Clare Morris, like, I know the clip you're going to play. Actually, the guard says that it was dark.
Mm. We have it now. We can play it now. Let's have a listen.
Are you disappointed that the fugitives were able to run out the front door, past the main, and into an open field and escape at 5:30 in the evening?
Well, of course we're not. Naturally disappointed that they weren't caught there and then, but I don't think, as you describe it, that they ran through the men. As I say, they ran as our men approached.
But they ran out the front door? Where
they ran out the front door as our men were approaching from the sides, on the road.
And the field they ran into was actually an open field. It's not one
of
the...
Yes, but this was in darkness, remember.
Extraordinary.
It's unbelievable. And, like, why hadn't they the foresight to just hold, look for reinforcements, completely surround that building and wait until the following day? Because it was a safe house. The people in it were going nowhere. They were safe, so they believed. But it's indicative of the times that was in it, Clare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard for me to describe how unprofessional it was, without offending various aspects of the organisation that I love so well.
But the systems and the training, they weren't in place. I mean,
Absolutely not.
We'll see in the documentary tonight as well how things changed after that.
That's right.
I suppose if you keep repeating mistakes, that's when a problem truly arises. In this case, very sad loss of two lives, but it did prompt change.
It did prompt change, but here's something, Clare. And if I was to go into Athlone today and there's a platoon of recruits in training, and I said to them, who's Private Paddy Kelly? I could lay a wager of €100 that not one of those would have been told about Ballinamore. You know, so we don't educate even the recruits coming in today about our past and where we should be going in the future. That's a Defence Forces problem.
Mm-hmm. Like, so you feel more should be done to remember him?
It's not just to remember him, but like it's to remind people of how dangerous this can be. Mm-hmm. Like, because we lost our innocence on the 16th at 3 o'clock on the 16th of December, 1983, never to be given back to us.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Claire.
PJ Higgins, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. And the programme is called The Case I Can't Forget. It's on RT1 tonight at 9.35. And as I say, I've watched it as an extraordinary programme and well worth a watch. Thank you very much indeed for coming in.